presenting very nicely. Thank you very much. I can feel the way the tune and the melody is defining the rhythm. And we're automatically breaking the sandhi in the after the eighth syllable. Remember, the majority of the Bhagavad Gita is written in Anushtup Chanda, which means there are 32 syllables to the verse. And the way you're chanting is automatically dividing each line in the proper place so that grammatically it makes sense. And we can breathe according to the number of the syllables of the verse. Just take a look at verse number one. Jayasi chet karmanaste. That's eight syllables. Mata buddhir janardana. That's eight syllables. That's 16 to the line. Tat kim karmani gore mong. That's eight. 24. Nijo ja, niyo, niyo jayasi keshaba. And four times eight is 32. So when we sing it in that kind of a melody, we're automatically dividing the sandhi, breaking up the lines of the grammar according to the natural rhythm of the chanda, of this particular rhythm. Jayasi chet karmanaste mata buddhir janardana. Takim karmani gore ma niyo jayasi keshaba. And when that's called samgit, when we're singing it. Remember, there are four types of basic types of pronunciation. Samgit, when you sing it. Udgit, according to the old classical Vedic rhythms. Jayasi chet karmanaste. Mata buddhir janardana, takim karmani gore mang, niyayo jayo si kesaba. Pranayam will flatten it out. Jayasi chit karmanaste mata buddhir janardana, takim karmani gore mang, niyayo yasi kesaba. And jivanang is the fourth one. Well, the point of the exercise is that we, by chanting and learning to chant in this way, we automatically get in the habit of breaking the line at the appropriate place. And it doesn't matter if you have a row of consonants all the way across the page, you'll know right where the tune itself will indicate where to break the line. It's called Jivanang. Every mantra has its origin in Om and its terminus in Om. Om Jayasi Chet Karmanaste Mata buddhir janardana. Tad kim karmani gore imang. Niyo jayasi keshaba. It takes a long time. It takes a long time to chant the Bhagavad Gita in Jivanang.
You hold the longs.
There's Rasya, Dirgha, and Pluto. The different beats that you hold for each letter. So the Plutos can be extended into Jivanang, into infinity. You can hold them all, the Rasya, the Pluto, the Dirga. The Russia has one beach, the Dirga has two beaches, and the Pluto has three beaches, which can be extended into Jivanam, adding life. You can extend it into infinity.
Jayasi ched karmanaste om matha budhir Janardana. Tat kim karmani gore mam niyo jayasi keshava.
Very good. Vibrating. Us.
Well, more than vibrating, we vibrate the whole universe. Jivanam, that's the fourth type of pronunciation. Let's read the translation and get into the study of the third chapter. Clarity of Pure Devotion said, "You who are worshipped by the people, Krishna, if you consider intelligence to be superior to action, why then do you counsel this dreadful action? Embodiment of the functions of creation, preservation, and transformation, Krishna? My intellect is confused because of these conflicting statements. Tell that one thing by which, without a doubt, I may obtain the highest good." So here the question is, I've got confusion now. You say that intelligence is superior to action. Now why are you telling me to act? Why don't you tell me to be intelligent? The respected Supreme Divinity said, "O you without sin, in this world two paths of perfection have been elucidated by me. Union with wisdom according to the enumeration of the principles, Shankhya, and union with action are the names of or kinds of union." There's Karma Yoga and Shankhya Yoga. Shankhya actually means the enumeration of the principles. Remember, in Shankhya philosophy, there are 24 principles. Let's talk about them. In order to move into the inner world, the first thing we've got to do is control the organs that act in the world. There are five organs of action: the upper appendages, the lower appendages, the tongue, the anus, and upper appendages, lower appendages, reproductive organ. Five organs that act. Stop acting. So that we have to put our bodies into a position of yoga so that they stop acting in the world. Because every movement of the body is a reflection of the movement of the mind. We want to hold the mind still. So we've got these five organs of action. Stop their movement. Now we have five organs of knowledge: the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. These five senses are bringing the outside world inside. We don't want any more of the outside world right now. We want to go inside. So the first step is to control the organs that move outside and act and interact with the outside. The second step is to control the senses, which bring the outside in. Now, we're closed off to the outside. When we look inside, we perceive there is five objects of perception, five objects of sensory perception. Ras, rup, gandha, sparsha, shabda. In the Devi Kavach, rase rupe cha gandhi cha sabde sparsha cha yogini satvam rajastamas chaiva rakshin narayadi sada. Taste, rase, rup, form. Taste is tasted by the tongue. Form is perceived by the eye. Sound is heard by the ear. Smell is smelled by the nose, by the olfactory sense. And touch is felt by the skin. So the objects of perception, which we see inside, like you hear my word, close your ears and hear inside what I just heard, what I just said. It's, you can hear it inside. You can think those words. The subtle body of the sensory perception is called a tanmatra. Five organs of action, five organs of sense, of knowledge, five objects of perception, of sensory perception, called tanmatras, and five mahabhutas, the constituent elements of creation, chitti, ap, tej, morud, bom, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are the 20 principles which give rise to the antakaran. The antakaran is the inner cause, which is comprised of mon, which we call mind. And what we mean is subjective thought. Buddhi we call intellect. And we call that objective thought. Chitta is all thought. So if I say this is a book, that is buddhi, objective thought. It is knowledge of objective fact. If I say this is a good book, the good belongs to mon, and the book belongs to buddhi. And the entire statement, this is a good book, is recorded in the citta, which is the substance of all thought, all the memories, both objective and subjective. Mon, buddhi, and citta. The subjective thoughts, all the adjectives and adverbs of experience. Buddhi, objective thought, all the nouns and verbs of experience. Citta, all thought, your entire vocabulary of experience. And these three are presided over or give birth to ahamkar, cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. As soon as I think, either objectively or subjectively, I exist as a separate entity. There is a self, an apprehension of self being different from the rest. I, as the thinker, being something different from the object of my thought, of what I'm thinking about. And those 24 principles are called the body of prakriti. Literally, before becoming this, the body of nature. And that prakriti is perceived by the independent principle called purusha. Now, these are the enumeration of the principles called Shankhya philosophy, When we take this a step further in the Chandi, we're going to get into Tantra philosophy. And that Tantra philosophy is going to expand those 24 principles into 36 principles, which take us even more subtly beyond Purusha and Prakriti into Sadashiva and Shakti. For the present exercise, let's stay with the Shankya philosophy. And Chitta. No. Chit or Chaitanya is consciousness. Chitta is not consciousness. Chitta is the object of consciousness, that which is perceived by consciousness, subjective and objective reality. Please, you have a question.
Solve it. Take a couple of days.
So, union with wisdom according to the enumeration of the principles is Shankhya. Please.
So, ahamkar,
yes,
is like the I or the ego?
Yes. That is what it is. I.
And so that is what perceives these, all these other
24 principles.
That the ego thinks, I am these.
Yes. That's right. The ego identifies with those perceptions. Mm-hmm. I think, therefore I am.
And until the experience of the Purusha, he'll always think he's that thing.
That's right. That's right. So the path that we've just enumerated, these enumeration of the principles says, control your organs of action so you don't go outside. Control your organs of knowledge so you don't bring the outside inside. Now you're closed off and you're inside. You only have to deal with the inner world. Now look at all those objects of perception that you're seeing inside, your sight and your sound and your smell and your taste and your feeling, and you know that they're not important. Dissolve them into the elements of existence. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether.
এখানে এই পুরা চ্যাপ্টার মধ্যে কৃষ্ণ অর্জুনকে উপদেশ দিয়েছে তোমার ইন্দ্রিয় তোমার সমস্ত ইন্দ্রিয়কে বশীকরণ কর.
Yes, this entire chapter, Mother is explaining, is the discourse about how to control the modifications of your senses and direct your perception inside. Because we will find that we can't see what's inside through the outer senses. That's why we learn to sit like yogis. We learn to breathe like yogis. We move from the anamaya kosha, the world of tangible matter, to the pranamaya kosha, the world of breath. And from the pranamaya kosha, we become more subtle and move into the manamaya kosha, which is the world of thought. And from the manamaya kosha, we move into the bhiganamaya kosha. And from thought, we dissolve all the thought into the light which is one with wisdom. And from the bhiganamaya kosha, we move into the anandamaya kosha. We dissolve all the light into the body of bliss, the bliss of consciousness. That's just where we're going through the enumeration of the principles. Vijnana. Vijnana maya kosha. Vijnana, it's actually called teja tattva, the principle of light. Yeah, illumination. The vijnana, the illumination of wisdom. I'm sorry, I missed the first.
Niditasana.
Niditasana.
Yeah, and then yoga dara jyatma ki upalabdhi kare, wo anubhav
kare. Mother is suggesting shravanang, mananang, niditasanam. We hear, we contemplate, and we deeply reflect. And when we move into that deepest part of reflection. We go into meditation, and from that meditation, we can feel, intuit the substance of this philosophy.
This vigyan,
this illumination. The illumination of that light, the prakash, illumination of light, of wisdom, that vigyanamaya kosha in the teja tattva, you can deeply intuit its presence. And it's not intellect. We left the intellect way back. I'm sorry, we blew our minds a long time ago. We've left buddhi behind far ago.
Is the purush the atma? What do we call that? Atma?
Yes, you can call the purush the atma. So there are two paths of perfection. Union with wisdom according to the enumeration of the principles samkhya, and union with action or karma yoga. Man cannot attain freedom from action without undertaking actions. Freedom is through action, not from action.
Right.
Man cannot attain freedom from action without undertaking actions. Nor can he attain renunciation, nor perfection of complete absorption. It's not fair to say, I have nothing, I'm renunciate. You have to say, I have something, and now I'm going to renounce it. It just doesn't work the other way around. You got to do something. Well, he's going to explain that.
In this verse, we say you withdraw.
Yes. Is that an action? Thank you.
So the real action is to withdraw from all action.
Well, he's going to suggest a little bit later, and I hate to ruin the plot for you. But in another place, he's going to say, the real action is to withdraw all of your attachment to the action and perform to the greatest efficiency that you possibly can without attachment. He's going to say to maintain the same bhava as you move to control your organs of action and control your organs of knowledge and move inside, have the same feeling when you move outside to work in the world. So withdraw your attention, your attachments to the fruits of every action that you perform. And here you will attain freedom from the action. The action won't bind you. Undoubtedly, there is no being born who can refrain from all activity even for a moment. For all beings are required to perform action by the attributes of nature. Even if you take a breath, you're acting. Even if you allow the blood to circulate in your circulatory system, you're acting. You're not free from action. The action is going on within, whether you're cognizant or not.
So even in your vikalpa, then there's action?
Absolutely.
So in duality, there can be no complete non-action?
Correct. All there can be is freedom from attachment to the action. Who restrains the organs of action while sitting, while the mind remembers the objects of the senses, such is called a foolish soul, a person of untrue behavior. And there's a footnote here. Here Krishna is distinguishing between the practice of communion and the perfection of communion. who has only the outward appearance of meditation should not be deluded with the egotism of thinking the goal to have been attained. However, sincere effort is better than no practice at all. Clarity of pure devotion, who has undertaken to discipline the organs of knowledge and action, has detached his mind from worldly feelings. He comes into union with action by means of the organs of action. This is superior. So, without worldly attachment, without worldly feelings, he's performing action. This is superior. By means of the organs of action, he's coming into union by dismissing the attachment from his action. Perform the activities of your discipline, for action is superior to refraining from action. You've got to have a discipline. And if you perform according to the discipline and dismiss the attachment from the performance of the action, this is superior. Even your body cannot be maintained by refraining from action. If you say, okay, don't breathe, don't act, I don't want any blood to circulate, then the organism can't sustain itself. Only those actions performed for the purpose of sacrifice are efficient behaviors free from attachment, son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna. All other actions in this world are actions of attachment. If we have the feeling of yajna, of communion, of yoga, if we have the attitude of yajna, the divine expression of yajna, of union, of yoga, then these actions can give us a freedom from attachment. All other actions are born in attachment. What we call siddhantachar is yajna. Puja, pat, homa, singing, sangeet, nrit, dancing for God, pravachan, explaining what we're doing and why we're doing it, and serving others as in the joy of worship. These are the actions of yajna, of sacrifice. These are the actions born of knowledge in accordance with the scripture, maintaining the Dharma. These actions can bring us to a position of freedom from attachment. All others' actions in this world are actions of attachment.
What is the puja?
Puja part.
Part.
Recitation of scripture. Yeah. Puja. Part, this is Siddhantachara. There are seven aspects. Puja, part, homa, sangeet, nrit, pravachan, and arpanam. Nrit is dancing. Pravachan, explanation. Arpanam, serving. The Lord of all beings born created mankind in the beginning with sacrifice and said, by this you will attain prosperity and the fulfillment of all desires.
Does he mean sacrifice here, turn the senses inward?
Not necessarily. He means taking yourself, freeing yourself from attachment to the fruits of every action you perform. For example, if you perform puja, thinking about what you're going to get from doing the puja,
then it's not sacrifice.
But if you perform puja thinking about God and your privilege of sitting in the presence of God, or if you recite the chandi thinking about the joy of doing my discipline, the privilege of demonstrating my love for God by doing this action, it's a sacrifice. Please. Yes, it is better to be attached to a pure thing than be attached to an impure thing.
It's okay.
So it's a very important stage in the development of a sadhu to become attached to their sadhana. Because I would rather have you attached to your sadhana than attached to going out and pursuing worldly desires. At least the sadhana is an attempt to free ourselves from selfishness. Whereas the worldliness is obviously an expression of our selfishness. The sadhana says, I want to perform this discipline which is designed to free me from my selfish attachment and my selfish nature. And even if I get mad about obstructions coming in the path, it's because I know that purifying myself is the most important thing I can do for myself and for my family and for my community. It's the greatest contribution I can possibly make. And that's why I would become upset if there are obstructions that preclude my completing my spiritual practices. Now, after some time, even that will go. But that's an important step in the development. That's what gives us the inspiration to move through the pain in the knees, through the pain in the butt, through the sitting, and through the wandering mind into the focus, because we really have a sincere desire to overcome all obstructions and all obstacles and to complete the sadhana as prescribed in the scripture. I believe in one of the books, I think it was Susila's book, I told the story how I wanted to do a Sahasra Chandi. I wanted to sit for 1,000 days, and I was I needed 3 ingredients. I needed a temple, a supply line, and I needed money, and I needed a visa. And every time I would get it all together, my visa would expire. And every time I'd get the visa, I'd run out of money. And I finally got so frustrated, I was running around from pillar to post trying to get all the ingredients together. And ultimately, I got so frustrated with the obstacles, I said, I'm just going to sit down and do it. And of course, in the middle of the recitation, the police came and said, why don't you have a visa? And ultimately, when they entered,
2 feet, huh?
Ultimately, when they entered the temple, the superintendent of police said, wow, he's doing this kind of sadhana, leave him alone.
And when he saw your face and Kali.
Yeah, well. So there comes a point when that frustration will become the driving force which makes us go beyond and do that sadhana with the integrity and the sincerity that's required to accomplish our focus.
Can I ask you more questions?
Please.
This first sentence, the Lord of all beings, who is Prajapati,
yes,
created by sacrifice. So that referring to like one of the creation stories that...
Yes.
I mean, I remember it's Brahma.
Yagena yagya maya janta devastani dharmani pratamanyasan. Yagena yagya, by means of the sacrifice, he created that creation.
What do you mean by this? I'm trying to find out why you mean sacrifice.
Okay, sacrifice means an activity which is performed in union. Remember, yagya comes from the root yuj, to unite. The union, he was in union with his action. He had no selfish interest in his action. He was just giving according to the dictates of Dharma. He was manifesting the ideal of perfection. It doesn't mean necessarily that he was starting a fire. It doesn't mean necessarily, but he was, because all friction creates heat. And the creation of every atom is produced in friction. Wherever there's movement, there's friction. Even as I pass my hand through the atmosphere, I'm pushing away molecules and creating friction, although it's of a very limited nature. So every movement creates friction, and all friction creates heat. So by means of this sacrifice, he's devoid of attachment. He has no selfish interest. He is in union. He's creating according to the prescriptions of Dharma. He is reaching for the ideal of perfection. This is a sacrifice. He's in Dharma.
Sacrifice because he's creating friction. He's engaging in action
without selfishness for God, for the manifestation of the eternal ideal of perfection.
And when he used the word sacrifice.
Well, he has no selfish attachment. He has sacrificed his selfishness through the action. And this is a sacrifice.
Sacrifice of ego.
Yes, the sacrifice of ego.
Through action.
It is an affirmative action designed to take us into union with God through the action.
So if you perform an action and say, like, Om Namah Shivaya, as you're performing an action, because you're not thinking of any selfish desire for yourself when you're doing the action, you're thinking of, say, Shiva, are you in union at that time?
You could be. I don't know what the rest of your mind is doing.
I mean, so would we, us mere mortals, be coming in, going in and out of this state, or is this some state like Ma's in all the time, some higher state?
Well, some of us get to visit for a short time, and some of us get to stay there.
And how do you know when you're actually in this state of union, or when you're forming?
You know. How do you know when you're in love? You know. Through this, you may deeply intuit the gods, and the gods may deeply intuit you. Each deeply intuiting the other will bring about the highest good. Deeply intuiting the attitude of sacrifice, the gods will bestow the highest enjoyment. There's the answer to your question, Parvati. Those who enjoy the gifts from the gods without offering to them are surely thieves. So every time you enjoy a gift, it's a gift from the gods. We want to offer it to them and remember them and say thank you to them. The virtuous who partake from the remains of sacrifice erase the effects of all sins. Lowly sinners cook and eat for their selfishness. So if we're just cooking and eating for ourselves without remembering God and without saying thank you for all that they've given us, we're just remaining in selfish attachment. That's our sin. The sin of remaining in selfish attachment. Cooking and eating for me. Not even saying thank you to the nature for providing me the substance of nature. All existence evolves from food, and from rain does food arise. From sacrifice does rain pour forth, and sacrifice comes from disciplined action. From Supreme Divinity has come forth knowledge of action, and from Supreme Divinity has come forth knowledge of that which is imperishable. Therefore, Supreme Divinity is always eternally established in sacrifice. The knowledge of the sacrifice is a manifestation of Supreme Divinity. The knowledge which comes from sacrifice is a manifestation of Supreme Divinity. Therefore, Supreme Divinity is eternally established in sacrifice, either through the action or through the realization which you get from the action. Whoever does not respect the movement of this cycle, lives a useless life of attachment to the impure senses, O son of she who excels, Arjuna. That man who delights in his own soul, who is contented with his own soul, and who is satisfied only with his own soul, he knows of nothing left to be done. For him, neither is there a purpose for completed actions, nor for incomplete actions, and regards all beings of existence without selfishness. Therefore, always efficiently perform all actions without attachment. For the man who performs actions without attachment attains the supreme. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong verse. Samprapnoti purushaha. Yeah. Yeah, purusha. The full, complete, and perfect individual consciousness. Excuse me, I was looking at the wrong verse. Yeah. For only through action did Dhanak and others become established in the attainment of perfection. You should act only with perception of the harmony of the world. Janaka here is used as an example of someone who has attained perfection through action.
He's a king.
Yes. Right. And Janaka and others like him became established in the attainment of perfection through action. You should act only with perception of the harmony of the world. In whatever way the best of men behave, they establish an example which may be respected by other men. Look at Srima. She's become an example to us all. O son of she who excels, Arjuna, for me there is no remaining obligation in the three worlds, nothing worth attaining which has not been attained. Even so, I persist in action. For one who is one with God, what else has to be done? Even so, we persist in action. Even though she has realized the self, she's still willing to travel around the world to share her love. She has nothing to do for herself, except to sew dresses for her girls, and sew shirts for her boys, and cook and edify her culture, her family. Work for the better upliftment of her family. Even so, she persists in action. For if ever I did not persist in unwearied action, men will respect my example in all ways, son of she who excels, Arjuna. If I do not perform action, these worlds will perish, and I will have become the cause of confusion which could destroy mankind.
Is it talking about his body doing something, or is it talking about his source?
Both. Both.
The source, I understand it, but him being the body.
Him being manifested in the universe, he must act. He is the best of men. If the best of men don't set a good example, then what example will we follow? So as the source of existence, if he doesn't act, all the worlds will perish. And if as an individual, being an example to his society, if he doesn't act in a proper way, what's the example will the society follow?
Right.
We'll all stop acting and say, oh, she sits lazily, I'll sit and be a lazy boy too. And then who's going to feed me? So if ever she stops acting, she will become the source of confusion and the destruction of mankind. Descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna, The ignorant act with attachment to their actions. The intelligent should act without attachment, seeking the harmony of the world. Do not try to cause an alteration in the intelligence of the ignorant who are attached to their action. The intelligent one who is united with efficient behavior will take delight in all action. Don't waste your time trying to instruct those who are attached to their attachments. You tell someone not to be attached to their attachments. What will they tell you in return? Hey, it's my attachment. I'm entitled to be attached. How can you instruct me not to be attached? Don't waste your time. Just do your action efficiently without attachment. Take delight in all action.
But you can't tell somebody not to be attached. They have to experience not attachment.
You got it. You got it. That's just what he's saying. Why are you going out to proselytize and convert the world? Just be an example. The world will convert itself. Or at least you will convert yourself.
Ma said to us one time recently, he said, you will not leave the world will leave you.
It's true. No matter how hard we strive to leave the world, there's always a little piece that clings to us. But when we focus on our objective, we focus on our godliness. Desires from the world come and knock on the door, and there's nobody home. I'm busy, otherwise engaged. Yes, that which is Caesar's. All actions are performed by the attributes of nature, the three gunas. The soul, deluded by his own ego, thinks his ego self to be the doer. O one of mighty arms, Arjuna, who knows the principles, the 24 principles of Shankhya that we just enumerated, distinguishes the attributes of action. They understand which is sattva-guna, which is rajaguna, which is tamaguna. They distinguish the attributes of nature. Understanding that the attributes of nature are revolving around each other, he remains free from attachment. I can see when it's time for my tamaguna to come. And I can see when it's time for my sattva-guna to come. I can see when rajaguna is expressing itself. And now when I have that discrimination, I try to control my behavior so I don't get in any more trouble. Because if I went around saying I want to be free and I'm going to express myself the way I feel it, I would always be in trouble. So understanding that the attributes of nature are acting according to their nature, I understand, when do I express myself loudly and vigorously? And when I can afford to be a little bit more subdued.
This is the Varna Mantra, isn't it? It's similar to that.
It's an expression of the, yes, of the cyclical transformation of the qualities of nature. Those who are deluded by the attributes of nature remain attached to the attributes of their actions. Who acts in accordance with his knowledge should not associate with those foolish beings who do not act according to what they know to be right. We can all expound on it. That's the need for satsang. That's why I'm so privileged that you guys come here and share with us, because we have satsang. And that gives inspiration to each other. And we inspire each other, and that way we keep focused on our goal. With full renunciation, fix your consciousness in spiritual knowledge, performing all actions for me. Becoming free from desire, free from attachment, fight this disease of darkness. Those men who always follow this doctrine of mine with the highest faith, free from envy, they become free through action. It's not free from action, which many of us love to dream. It's accomplished once and for all, and then I don't have to act anymore. No. It's clearly indicated in the text. Free through action. Karma bhi. Karma bhi. The bhi means either by means of action or through action. It's, what do they call it? Instrumental. He's not free. Not free. That is not a yogi who is free. That is a yogi who is bound by his discipline. Those who are adamant and do not follow this doctrine of mine know that they are deluded in their lack of wisdom and lost in unconsciousness. The wise man makes efforts according to his own perception, according to his own nature. Jotomot totopot. As many as there are individuals, so many are their paths to proceed. All living beings follow their nature. How can they be stopped? In the relationship between the senses and the objects of perception, both attraction and repulsion are situated. Avoid the influence of both of them, for they are adversaries who obstruct the way. Preferable is one's own ideal of perfection, however deficient, to another's ideal, however well observed. Even poverty in the pursuit of one's own ideal is better, while another's ideal is filled with fear. To thy own self be true. You have to know yourself. What is your ideal of perfection? And pursue that. Someone has an artistic nature. Someone wants to learn to sit. Someone has an ideal to raise a family. Someone has an ideal to share spiritual vision. Someone wants to be a yogi. Every one of us has a different nature. And in being true to the ideal of perfection of our own nature, through our own dedication, we'll find that freedom through our action.
It's confusing.
How so?
Because, everybody, of course, has own likes and dislikes.
Yes.
Some people don't pursue any spiritual practice or live a spiritual life at all.
That's not their ideal of perfection. That is not their ideal of perfection. Their ideal of perfection will always include the attainment of the highest peace and illumination, the highest ideal to which they can strive. It won't be just my ideal of perfection is just to enjoy myself in this world. That will never be any individual's highest ideal. That may be where they settle. That may be a habit. But that means that they have neglected their ideal. They're not being true to their ideal self. They may not even know it.
While another's ideal is filled with fear, it means that if you try to act in somebody else's, you'll have fear.
That's right. If you try to put yourself into, mold yourself according to someone else's ideal, when it's not really your ideal.
Like trying to be
Yes.
No, that's not how I understand it.
Yes.
No. What I understand it is like, this is your nature. But if you try and become like him.
Somebody else's nature. That's what it, yes. Certainly. That's not your nature.
In the previous chapter, it's better to die doing your own dharma than the dharma of another man. Is that in the previous chapter?
Yes.
Oh, is this it now?
The way he's translated.
Oh,
I thought
this is it now?
Perfection is dharma.
Huh?
Dharma.
This is, dharma is the ideal of perfection. So it is better to pursue your own ideal of perfection. That's your dharma. Well, another a person's ideal is bhoyavaha. It's filled with fear. Boy, please.
There must be a lot of times when you come, when you talk to people and you see that they're not living their, they're going for their ideal of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I know Mom told me a story of, you know, some guy in Europe who was saying, I'm a, you know, Vedantist,
mm-hmm.
Advaitist or something. But you embrace their idea and you support them. You say, that's great. Why do you do that? Instead of giving them a little knowledge, or do you do that later?
We did later.
We will only give knowledge to people who ask the question of us. People who come to teach us and to explain to us what their ideal of perfection is. What we did with this Advaitist was both of us went into samadhi and left him.
এবং ও যখন এসছে প্রশ্ন যখন করেছে সমস্ত অহংকার কাম ক্রোধ লোভ মোহ দিয়ে প্রশ্ন করেছে একজন আমি সাপোর্ট করেছি ওকে ও সমস্ত কাম ক্রোধ লোভ মোহ আমি নামিয়ে দিয়েছি সাপোর্ট করে তারপরে আমি ওকে ধরেছি
Mother said when he came to offer his philosophy and his rendition of his philosophy to us, he came with his complete ego intact, with all his anger and passion and desires. And Mother supported him so that he let down all of his defenses. But ultimately, we left him sitting there contemplating all of his concepts of Vedanta while both of us went into deep meditation. And a couple of hours later, the guy was still sitting there thinking himself to be right because he knew that no practice was necessary. He was already realized. No, it was in France.
Ultimately, he bowed down. And he's fixing our program this year.
Clarity of pure devotion said, then why does a man move to unite with sin? By what force is he driven even against his will? Not too much more.
I know.
Are you tired?
No, I'm not tired. I'm enjoying.
Oh. Okay. Is anyone else tired?
No.
What I'll do? This five elements is doing Haim. What I'll do?
Oh, I was thinking I was boring you. The respected Supreme Divinity said, desire and anger arise from nature's quality of passion. They are insatiable and terribly wicked. Know them as the enemies. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajogunas mudbhava. Desire and anger arise from nature's quality of passion. Excuse me, Rohit.
The first paragraph before.
Oh. Yes.
And this is the answer.
This is the answer.
What is the answer?
He's just getting into the explanation.
The question is
why does a man move to sin?
Why do I move, even though I don't want to?
Yes.
Why?
And he's saying, Kama esha, krodha esha, rajagunas mudbaba. He's saying these desire and anger arise from nature's quality of passion. This is Rajaguna. It is the nature, the cyclical transformation of the gunas, the qualities, the attitudes of nature within each individual. Rajaguna gives birth to Ichha Shakti, to the energy of desire. They are insatiable and terribly wicked. Know them as the enemies. That's what this battle is all about. This Kurukshetra, the field of action.
What would he be redefining sin as
then? Well, let's go on in the text. Give him a chance to give his explanation, and then we'll ask questions about it. As fire is covered by smoke, the highest ideal covered by imperfection, the fetus hidden in a womb, just so is wisdom hidden by these enemies.
You got an answer.
The wisdom of the wise is hidden by these eternal enemies in the form of selfish desires, which are insatiable like fire. O son of he who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna. So here we have Rajaguna is giving rise to desire and anger, which are very wicked and insatiable, and they are terrible enemies, and they hide wisdom. And the wisdom of the wise is hidden by these eternal enemies in the form of selfish desires. And these selfish desires are insatiable, and they allow us to rationalize any behavior which fulfills my selfishness, my selfish desire. And that's why we are attracted towards sin or confusion. The senses, mind, and intellect are said to be their residence. Through these, the wearer of the body becomes deluded, and wisdom becomes hidden. Therefore, O best of the descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna, first you must control the senses, killing this evil which destroys wisdom and the application of wisdom. The senses are said to be great. Greater than the senses is the mind. Greater than the mind is the intellect. Greater than the intellect is she. O one of mighty arms, Arjuna, knowing that which is greater than the intellect, subdue your own self by means of your own soul. Kill this enemy in the form of desire, which is so difficult to overcome. Om.
Yum, yum.
So is there a gray area with controlling the senses? Like, I remember Durga one time said, that Ma said, if there's a desire there, then fulfill it, then it'll be gone.
Something like that. I won't go around quoting Durga on that. Well, Durga said it was okay, Mom.
It depends what kind of desire.
Actually, I think the catchword here is know that. This
yes.
is what Thakur talks about as discrimination.
Yes.
Know it, which really allows you to remove yourself and look at it and discriminate.
Yes.
So, coming to your point, you can't help yourself. Know it, be aware of it, discriminate. Remove yourself for a split second.
Just put that moment of discrimination between the stimulus and the response.
Right.
Yeah. Then you know if the desire is really overwhelming you, then
or,
it's really a strong desire.
Or is
or
it
if
just
it's just a desire like to go brush your teeth? It's not that big a deal. But if you gotta have a piece of pizza, you know,
it's
a strong desire.
I think you're right. You're a big chocolate cake. So jumping into it take a second.
Let's see, how big a piece do I really need?
I cannot take. I have a diabetes. I mean, I'm looking. I'm controlling.
Know the consequences.
Consider the consequences.
Somewhere along the line, it will become natural, spontaneous, not to indulge. In
maybe.
The natural sense.
Maybe not.
Or getting pushed into it, being helpless about it. Somewhere along the line, you will be helpful as you're being helpless.
Well,
this discrimination.
As discrimination becomes more and more a habit of life, then we find less and less that overwhelming attraction to do the wrong thing, because we have a moment of discrimination to think, what is the probable outcome of what I'm about to perform? And is it something that I want to deal with later? Most of us are confronted with a stimulus and we're already responding. We don't even allow the slightest interval. For example, when someone is speaking, are we listening to what they're saying, or are we planning our rebuttal immediately? We're thinking about what we're going to say in rebuttal, in reply, so that we don't even hear what they have to say. The objective of this form of discrimination is to create intervals between stimulus and response so that we can have a moment of reflection and discriminate as to what is the appropriate response. And the only way I can know what the appropriate response might be is if I can determine what is my goal, what is my objective, what is the probable outcome of my action. What am I seeking to get? Do I want to demonstrate how right I can be? Or do I want to win the battle?
And we see those choices every day. We all have them every day. And we see them acted out sometimes disastrously by when somebody loses his temper on the highway and beats up the guy in the next car.
Uh-huh.
You know, where the emotions got ahead of the intellect.
Right.
The discrimination couldn't act, and the guy was too emotional, the person was too emotional. Mm. And on the other hand, if that happens to one of us, I know what I do is I say, well, let the guy go. Let the intellect lead and use that ability not to create disastrous results. But sometimes you see disastrous results get created over almost nothing.
Absolutely.
But there's no interval.
So then, as we practice renunciation, we cultivate the habit of allowing discrimination to be the guide of our emotions. And how much of my emotion do I really want to exhibit in this circumstance? What is really necessary or advisable? What is in the best interest of our family or of society? And then discrimination and renunciation begin to lead our lives through all actions across the Kurukshetra, the field of all action. And that's what the book is designed to do. It's going to give us the definition of Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, the field of the highest ideals of perfection to be applied to the field of all action. That's why we're studying the book. So that discrimination and renunciation will be the guiding forces to take us across that battlefield of life. Any other questions?
Always look at the Gita cover. Most of the other covers have the chariot with Arjun and Krishna sitting on top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Arjun sitting on top and Krishna holding the horses. And I've always considered the horses to be the five senses. But Krishna is holding the horses, not Arjuna.
No, Krishna is holding.
He was the charioteer.
Yeah.
And he's leading through the battlefield. This, and the emotions, the intellect, and all that is behind. That doesn't lead.
Right.
In common, simple language, it's like conscience leads. Conscience is what is supposed to be the leading force. And the mind, senses are not able to backseat. But they act like Arjuna's firing the arrows.
Right. Goody.
Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Thank you all.
Thanks, Swami. Thanks, Mom.
We'll go off the record now. Thank you, Sarat.